So last week we really led up and we read quickly through the brachas. Today we're going to go into this first section. As I don't know if I explained, I don't think I explained, but when Bilam gives these special brachas to the Jewish people, they're actually divided into sort of 3/4 sessions. What that means is that he went up on the mountain, as we saw, and he saw the Jewish people, and beautiful things came out of his mouth. And after a few beautiful brachas, he stopped. Well, he tried hard to stop, and he finally was able to. And what Balak did was he took Bilam to a different position, hoping that from this position he'll be able to actually say something negative. And they tried it a few times. So there's a few segments that the brachas are divided into. And today we're going to go into depth on this first section to understand what is the real meaning of these brachas that he gives them in the first section of brachas. We can understand that every time that he gives another set of brachas, they're even stronger and, if you want to say, more intense and deeper brachas. But the first set is setting the tone for all of them. And the last set is actually talking about the future when Mashiach will come. But this one has a little bit of an allusion as well to that. And we're going to see what is the theme, if you want to say, and what are the special brachas that he gives us. So if you look at your sheet, because it was from last week. So you have to go to page 286. No, one minute. That's the first page you have, right? Just what's your first page that you have in front of you?
286.
Okay, good. Yeah, so we're going to go on because we've done these. Okay, so go to page 288. That's what we're going to start with. And 288, yes. Okay, so if you look at page 288, so what that is Perek Chaf Gimel, and it's Pasuk Zayin. So it's chapter 23, and it's verse 7. And here we will begin reading the brachas again inside, and seeing as we see what is special about these incredible brachas. So just before we read them inside, remember we mentioned this, and I just want to repeat this one last time, because this is how the Aruch Chaim explains what happens. So he's standing there, Bilam, and he's looking out at the Jewish people, and he thinks he's going to be able to say all these negative things. He still thinks so, until he opens his mouth, and what comes out of his mouth is, against his will, these incredible brachas. So his words are being like changed at the last moment by Hashem, like everything's being twisted in his mouth. And not only that, but as we said, it's almost as if Hashem is putting this coating on his mouth so that the words shouldn't be tainted, because he's such a tainted, wicked man. And it's almost like we don't want the holy words to come through such a wicked person. Okay, so let's see what he says. So if you look at the last two words on this page, the pasuk starts, Vayisa Mishala, right? Here they translate, he declaimed his parable. Vayisa Mishala means he lifted, so like he raised his voice. And what came out of his voice was a mushal. Mushal, we know in Hebrew, exactly a parable. But it's interesting because we're going to have to understand those words. What's the parable? Let's see the first words that come. So you go to the next page. Vayaymar. And he says, and that's how the Aruch Chaim says, what does it mean? And he says, if he lifted his voice to say his parable, of course he said. So this word Vayaymar shows us that it was Hashem's word coming through his mouth, and it was against his will. And what does he say? So he starts with the words, Min Aram Yancheni Balak Melech Mayav, right? From Aram, Balak, the king of Mayav, led me. We have to understand what's the blessing in this, but this is just telling the story that I came from Aram and Balak, the king, asked me to come. He invited me to come. And where was that? Meharre Kedem, from the mountains of the east. And what did he say to me? He said to me, Lecha ara li Yaakov, come and invoke curse upon Yaakov, ulecha zoyama Yisrael, and come and bring anger upon the Jewish people, upon Israel. Now, it's a bit repetitive. You can see already it's poetic. So just on a simple level, we might understand that because these are such beautiful blessings, they are poetic. They're said in a... It's like almost like a song, you know? They're said in such a... And that's why there is a bit of repetition. But obviously, everything in Torah is very significant. So we have to understand, what is he saying here and what is the significance? Before we go, we'll read one more pasuk and then we're going to come back to explain this one. And then he says, so I was invited to curse the Jewish people, and he calls them by two names, Yaakov and Yisrael, and he uses the words Ara, which is curse, and Zoyama, which they translate as bring anger, but it's like also a curse. Ma ekoiv loy kabay kel, how can I curse if Hashem has not cursed? Uma ezoim loy za'am Hashem, how can I anger when Hashem has not been angry? So here he's already explaining, just on a simple level, why he can't curse. I can't curse because they're not a cursed people. We have to understand what he's saying. So before we go deeper, I want to see first Rashi. Rashi, if you go right to the bottom of this page, he says, Ara li Yaakov, on this page, we'll just stay on this one. Ara li Yaakov ulecha zayam Yisrael. So he says, what is he saying? B'shnei, first of all, you notice, B'shnei shmei sehem, with the two names, Amra lei lekalalam, he was told to curse them by both of their names. Shema echad mehem muvak, maybe one of them is specifically designated. In other words, we want to make sure to cover all bases that the curse should take effect. And maybe, even though they're known by these two names, maybe only one of them is really accurate, and we want to make sure. So that's why he has to use both names. That's one way to understand that. Let's go to the next Rashi, and we'll come back to this in a minute. And then he says, how can I, you know, curse when Hashem hasn't cursed? He says, so what does that mean? How can I curse when Hashem hasn't cursed? So he says something very magnificent. He says, Kishahayu re'uyim lehiskalel, when they were fit to be cursed, lo niskalelu, they weren't cursed. What does that mean, when they were fit? And he gives examples. Kishehizkir aviyem es avaynam, when their forefather mentioned their sin, which means when Yaakov mentioned the terrible things that his children did, the mistakes they made. And you would think sometimes when a person does something wrong, goes against your commands, well, then you can, so to speak, the word curse is a harsh word, but you can tell them off and say something negative. But you know, look what happens. He says, he describes, what did Yaakov say? Ki ba'apam hargu ish. This was about the story when Shimon and Levi, right, when they killed the whole city of Shechem, and Yaakov was very upset. How does Yaakov tell them off? He doesn't say, how dare, what did you do, and you know, all the and you're terrible. That's not what he says to them. He says to them that with your anger, you killed a man, right? For in their rage, they killed a man. In other words, like kilel el apam, he cursed nothing but their rage. So he didn't curse them. He didn't point out their bad. He said what they did was bad, that they were angry. So even when, in a way, they deserve to be cursed, they're not cursed. So how can I curse them? That's what Bilam says. See, they're never cursed. Okay, very interesting. Then he points out also, we say, even when their forefather Yaakov deceitfully entered Eitzel Avi to his father Yitzchak, right? We know he went in and he really Yitzchak thought it was Esav, and Yaakov dressed up as Esav, so he was acting in a very deceitful way. So really, he should have been cursed afterwards because he stole the blessings. And what do we know? What did Yitzchak do? As we say, Hayo Ro'il Iskali was worthy to be cursed. Ma ner marsham, what is stated there? Gam baruch yihyeh, he shall also be blessed. Pamvarchim, he says, it's interesting. So therefore, of those who stand to bless, it says, Eile Yamdu, and another example, Eile Yamdu Levarech Es Ha'am. This example happens later. Before Moshe Rabbeinu passes away, we know the famous thing that he divided the Jewish people into two different groups. One group he puts on one mountain, one group he puts on another mountain. He turns to one group and he says all the beautiful blessings, and the other group is where he says all the terrible things that will happen if you don't follow the Torah, right? So those are quite negative things. But even there, what does Moshe say? So to the group that he's saying the blessings, he says, you will be blessed. He actually uses the word, you are a blessed people, right? If you do this and this and this, if you follow the Torah, you will be blessed. But what does he say to the ones who he wants to say the negative consequences? Let's see the words that he uses there. So he says, so the ones that the blessing, he says, these shall stand to bless the people. But b'mekalalim, but those who are to stand to curse, he says, lo nemar, it doesn't say ve'ele yamdu lekalal es ha'am, these shall stand to curse the people. Rather, what does it say? Ve'ele, and these, yamdu al haklala, will stand on the curse. So he doesn't put the word people with the curse, right? So he's, in other words, it's a very, very ambiguous statement. It's like, if you don't do this, well, this is what will happen. But he doesn't ever even insinuate that these people are cursed people or can even be cursed, even if they don't follow the right way. So again, we see how careful we are never cursed, even if, so to speak, we deserve. So he says, how can I curse them now? And he says, Le'rotzala, as we didn't want to curse them. That's what Bilam is saying. And then he says, Le'za'am Hashem. Hashem has not been angry. He says, as for me, what is my strength? My power is nothing but the fact that I know how to determine precisely the time in which Hashem is angry. And what does he say? And he's not angry now. So maybe I have a chance of causing something negative to happen to these people. If I know Hashem is angry at them, then I can say, highlight, so to speak, as we know. It's like when a child does something wrong. And if the child has done many things wrong and the parent is not in a good mood, well, then you might say, you know what, look what he just did, and the parent might get angry. But if you come in and the parent is in a very good mood and the child made a mistake, well, the parent is not going to get angry. Even if the child made a mistake, they're not going to get angry. So he says, Hashem is not angry. What can I possibly do? I have no power now. Part of what he's saying is he's almost defending himself to the King Balak and saying, it's not my fault that all these beautiful blessings are coming out of my mouth. I can't help it. These are a people that are impossible to curse. Hashem is not angry. What can I do? So you can see how he's beginning before all the beautiful words will come out of his mouth. But just before we go further, I just want to share a few nice points about these words specifically. Also, interesting that just the Mefarshim say. So one thing that's brought out is very interesting. He says, he starts off with, you know where I come from? Balak called me to come. I come from a nation called Aram. And Balak, he is, as we know who Balak is. Who is Balak? It's interesting. Bilam, who is he descended from? I don't know if you know. Who's his ancestor? Some people say even his father or his grandfather was Lavan. Yes. Beautiful Lavan, right? Who was so nice to Yaakov. But nevertheless, a relative. But who was the grandfather of Balak? It says, interestingly, he comes from light. That's what it says, one opinion. He comes from light. So, very interesting. What Bilam is saying here is, do you realize what we're trying to do? Balak, who comes from light, the only reason Balak is alive is because Avraham saved him. Yeah. Right? The only reason that I'm alive, Bilam says, it's a very interesting thing. It says that when Yaakov came to the house of Lavan, Lavan only had daughters. How do we know he only had daughters? For sure he only had daughters, because if he would have had sons, Rachel would not have been at the well with the sheep. The son would have been there. Who sends a daughter amongst the shepherds? In those times, definitely not, and it's dangerous, right? Who knows what the shepherds could do to her, and such a beautiful girl. Must be he had no choice. He didn't have sons. So when did Lavan have sons? It says after Yaakov moved there, the blessing of Hashem came with Yaakov. And not only did he have more children, he had sons and daughters, so he had more children and he had sons. So Bilam is only there because of Yaakov. Balak is only there because of Avraham. And what Bilam is making a comment here is saying, look at us ungrateful people, that we want to curse the people who it is only because of them that we're even here, that we even exist. So right away, he's commenting about that. So he's already showing how ridiculous this whole situation is and how crazy it is that he even thinks he's going to be able to curse them. So that's immediate, like that's the introduction to the whole situation. Sure, sure.
Didn't Rivka also come to the well by herself? Didn't she have brothers?
Okay, so that's a very interesting question. Yeah, that's a very good question. She did come to the well and she was a girl. So it's interesting why Lavan didn't go to the well at that day. You know what, Sylvia? I'm going to research because it's a good question, and I don't know the answer. I don't want to just make something up. I don't know. I want to look it up. But that's a fascinating thing, because usually it wouldn't have been the girl coming. Yeah.
It was Bashir.
That's it. It was Bashir. That's it. Yes. Yeah, but it seems that Rivka was on her own because she was the one schlepping all the water for all the camels and the... Rivka, good morning, good to... Always good to see you.
Oi! I went back to get the cop. By the time I got back home, the pain went.
Well, Well, it's good to see you anyways. Okay. All right, but we'll have to research Sylvia as a good question. Okay, we're going to have to make sure we find that answer. All right, I have homework. Okay. I just want to say one more, two more beautiful points about this. It says, that's what we mentioned, the Arachaim already, but also, why the two names? Okay, that's also interesting. He mentions both Yaakov and Yisrael, right? So we said, Rashi says simply, why both names? Because just in case, one is not accurate, whatever. But the truth is that these names symbolize a different part of the Jewish people. Okay, so that's true. Very good. Yaakov is the woman. But I don't know if he wants to mess with the woman, but yes, Yaakov is the woman. But there's another thing about the name Yisrael and Yaakov, that the name Yaakov actually refers to the Jewish people also, generally, the ordinary, like all of us, really, because the Ekev is the heel. So it's really the ordinary Jew. Yisrael comes from the word Li Reish, which is the tzaddikim, the righteous ones, the heads. So over here, we have something fascinating, that when, I don't know if you remember, when Balak called Bilam initially, he said to him two things. Come hit them, destroy them, and chase them away. If they're destroyed, who's he going to chase away? So the Mefarshim say that even Balak was aware that certain of the Jewish people who are so righteous, we are never going to be able to harm them. The most that we can possibly think we're going to be able to do is to chase them away. That refers to the great tzaddikim. But the ordinary Jew, what he's hoping is to be able to actually destroy them. So over here, when Bilam starts to talk, he says, I would so much like to target both kinds of Jews, the ordinary Jew, which is Yaakov, and the special Jew, which is Yisrael. But what could I do if Hashem is not allowing me to do harm to either of them? Even the ordinary Jew, I'm only going to be able to say tremendous brachas to him. Because as we're going to see, even the ordinary Jew is not exactly ordinary and is beloved by Hashem. Okay, so that's why also both of those names are highlighted here. Let me just see one more beautiful point about how can I curse when Hashem hasn't cursed. So here, yeah, the Arachaim also said something beautiful. He says, the truth is like this, the fascinating concept about this whole thing. What were they even trying to accomplish here? Because if you think about it, if you curse somebody, God forbid, and let's just say they are perfect, they're amazing. I mean, what's your curse going to help? It's not good morning, Michelle. It's not going to help anything, right? If they don't deserve to be punished, they won't be punished, right? The only way that a curse can make a difference is if the person has done something wrong and they deserve something negative to happen. What can happen? Very interesting thing. How could your curse make a difference? So the Arachaim says something quite magnificent. The only thing that it can make a difference is that we know there's a fascinating way that Hashem conducts himself in the way he relates to us people. We say that as part of the 13 attributes of mercy. One of the 13 attributes of mercy is we say that Hashem is Erech HaPayim, which means he is slow to anger, which means that even if he should be angry, and even if he should punish us, what Hashem does is he has a lot of patience, and he waits, and he delays the punishment with the hope that in the meantime we'll do tshuva, and then we won't need to be punished, right? That's what Hashem does. That's part of his attributes of mercy. So now, if a person does something wrong, and they really deserve a punishment, but Hashem is in his normal state of slow to anger, so a person can keep on going and nothing will happen to them, and hopefully the next day they'll wake up better and they'll do tshuva and everything will be fine. But if in the meantime a curse happens, somebody says something very negative, which highlights that negativity that that person does, and the other condition has to be, and Hashem is not in his normal patient state of being, which we don't know when that could be, well, then the curse can have an effect. Over here, this is what Bilam and Balak were hoping for. But that's why Bilam starts. He says, how can I curse when Hashem is not angry? If Hashem is not angry, even if they deserve something negative to happen to them, nothing negative will happen because Hashem has patience and he'll give them the opportunity to do tshuva. So that's why those words are, so to speak, the preface as explaining why what's going to come out of his mouth is exactly the opposite of what he really wants to come out of his mouth. But it gives us an incredible lesson also for us. It's very, very powerful, all these brachas, for us to understand that a lot of times when we reflect, and this is something that happens to us, this is part of the Yetzer Hara's best tactics, he'll say to us, well, you made a lot of mistakes yesterday. Like you wake up in the morning and you think, today, oh man, it'll be a good day, a new day, a fresh start. But then we start to think and we say, who are we fooling? Look what we were yesterday. Look what we just did. We're not in the best state. We're not going to. And what ends up happening is we feel defeated before we even begin. And here you see what Bilam is saying. How can I be angry when Hashem is not angry? In other words, how can I cause anger? Why? Because we have to remember that Hashem is Erech HaPayim. Hashem has patience, so to speak. If Hashem has patience, we should have patience on ourselves. But what that means is that it's an opportunity. So don't waste it. So change. Do something better. Today is an opportunity. And what you did yesterday doesn't necessarily dictate, first of all, how you're going to be today, but also doesn't mean that it's going to lead to something negative happening to you. Remember, chaparayim, remember that moment that you have, that you can take your time, that you can take this opportunity, and you can be different. So that's also part of why this is, so to speak, part of the words of the brachas that he says. Okay, let's see a little bit more. I wanted to see if there was anything else here before we go into the next pasuk. Oh, now the next pasuk really begins the brachas. Beautiful. So we are now, if you look at, on page 290, it's pasuk tes. What does Bilam say? Ki miroish tzurim erenu. For from its origin, this is how they translate it. The article puts, it's not the, yeah, it's ready with, it's mixed in with all the commentaries. It doesn't matter, we'll see. Meroish, we'll explain it a few ways. Meroish tzurim erenu. Why is he saying, okay, I don't want to translate the way they're translating. What does meroish tzurim mean? Remember, where did we say Balak led Bilam to? On the mountain. Do you remember? On this hill. So that's right. So he can see them, right? So he can have a view. Tsur is a kind of mountain. It's a lower mountain. So he says, from the top of these mountains, Erenu, I see them, right? I see it. Umi Gvais. So Tsurim is a higher mountain. Gvais is perhaps a lower mountain. Again, Ashurenu. It's another word of seeing. I see them. Now, what do I behold? What do I see? So then he describes, what do I see? Hen om levada dishkan, as we mentioned last week. These words are like now playing out 100 million times over. So, behold, it is a nation that will dwell alone. Om levada dishkan, uvagoyim lo yischashav. And they are not reckoned amongst the nations. As we mentioned last week, and Yehuda Avner says it so beautifully in his book, the way he describes that meeting that with all those important people in Israel when they were learning it, and how Nechama Leibowitz said, she explained it so beautifully. This is a nation that no matter what, when you go into the United Nations, they can be, it looks like they have a table like everybody else, right? And they have I don't know what they're called, the representative in the United Nations. It looks like Israel's just amongst, never. It's never like the other nations, and it plays out all the time. We are never like the other nations, even if we want to be. We cannot be. But let's understand the bracha in it. It sounds like a curse, right? It sounds like we are always singled out. We are always judged differently, which we are. We are always dealt with differently. We are always, in a certain sense, suffering in a sense more than other nations, and we are held to such a crazy high standard that is not even doable. Nothing like the other nations. But don't forget, this is a bracha. So we have to understand how this works. What's he saying here? Okay, but this is something, as we say, that it's, we don't have to, this is not just a prophecy that we're waiting. This has happened throughout the generations from the beginning. Okay, but I want to just read that, yeah, that we can read one more pasuk and we're going to go into both of them. Okay, let's see the next pasuk and then we're going to see Rashi and the commentaries. Then he says, Mi mana afar Yaakov, who has counted the dust of Yaakov, Umispar es Raiva Yisrael, or numbered a quarter of Israel. Simply, we can understand, remember, he's standing on the mountain. And if you think about it, he sees the vast nation. I mean, it's not so vast, but it's still a big nation. And they're camped there, right? So when you see them, like, it's like nowadays we have sometimes, I don't know what you call it, the view from above. What is it called? Like aerial, you know how they take, like a drone will take a picture, you know, you see. So if you see like these big concerts or demonstrations or whatever, and then you can get an aerial view, then you see how many people are really there, right? So he's seeing the amount, that's why he's commenting, look at this nation that is so, you can't even count a quarter of them. Why does he use the word quarter, literally? Because, do you remember how the Jews camped? They were divided into four, exactly. So that's why. who can count a quarter of them even. And then he says, Tamais nafshi mais yesharim, may my soul die the death of the upright. This is an interesting thing how this comes in. And the last three words, Vatehi acharisi kamayu, and may my end be like his. This is the end of this segment of the brachas. That's it. Then you'll see that Balak gets upset with him because this doesn't sound like a curse. So he's upset. Okay, we're going to go into that soon. But let's understand what he's saying. Coming back to the first thing. Ki meirosh tsurim erenu. So first let's see what Rashi says. And that's really how the art scroll translates according to Rashi. A little bit of the Medrash, really. So he says like this, from its origin. What does it mean from its origin? So he says, Ani mistakel bereshisam, I look at their origins, ubetchilas sharsheim, and at the beginning of their roots, and what do I see? Va'ani roya oisam miyusadim, and I see them. Here they translate entrenched, but like firm, v'chazakim, and strong. Like they're, literally they have these incredible roots. Katsurim ugva'is halalu, as these rocks and these hills. How do they have this strength? Al yidei avais v'imahais, by means of the patriarchs and the matriarchs. In other words, they have strong roots, right? Look at these people. These people come from such special people. They come from the mothers and the fathers, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah. So these people are incredible. They are strong. How do you understand? I'm just asking an interesting question. How do you understand Rashi? Who is these harim, right? These mountains and these gva'is, are they referring to the Jewish people or are they referring to the mothers and the fathers? What do you think? How's Rashi explaining it? If you look at the words of Rashi, I look at their origin and at the beginning of their roots, and I see them entrenched and strong as these rocks and hills, by means of the patriarchs and the matriarchs. So what is he, who is he comparing the hills, the mountains to? Who are the mountains?
The Jewish people.
Oh, you say the Jewish people. Mm-hmm. And how are they like them? Why are they so strong? Because they come from, very good. Okay, the reason you understood it, that the truth is that some people, when they read Rashi, don't understand it that way. And the Medrash is not as clear. The Rashi has actually changed a little bit, the words of the Medrash. If you just look at the Medrash, it's as if the hills and the mountains are the mothers and the fathers. And there are other psukim that do say that. There are other psukim in Tanakh which call the fathers and the mothers, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, that they are mountains and that the mothers are hills. But 100%, if we read Rashi correctly, what we are saying is right. That he is not saying that the mothers and the fathers are hills and mountains. He's saying we are hills and mountains. And why? What is hills and mountains? Remember, what did he start the bracha with? The word? Vayisa mishalai. His parable. It's a parable. So here we have a parable. Because up until now we had no parables. We don't really have parables here. This is the parable. We are being compared to mountains and hills. Just like mountains and hills are strong, so too the Jewish people are strong. Why? Because we come from such incredible roots, from our mothers and our fathers. And we have to understand, what does that mean? What is Bilam really, really saying here? What is the specialness, the uniqueness of the Jewish people, that we are so strong and we are compared to mountains? And he has to say it with a mushel. He could have just said, look what I see. I see the Jewish people are strong. He doesn't say that. He compares them to mountains and hills. Why? Why do we use a parable when we use a parable?
You can't penetrate.
Excellent. A parable is because something's too hard to understand and we can't relate to the actual thing, right? That's why we have to use a parable. That's usually with children, you know, a lot of times you say something because, or for us, when it's not relatable. So you say the parable is more relatable, and then the actual thing you derive, you understand a little bit. You know that you're getting some of it. So what that means for us is that there's something much deeper here that we have to understand. What is Bilam saying and what is it that he doesn't understand? So here we have to understand something very incredible. What Bilam is saying is, I see these people with my physical eyes, but I know that I'm not getting it. I'm not getting it. I have no idea why they are so different. And that's what he continues. What is it about them that makes them so unique, that makes them so special, that they are always different, that they never blend in? From now till eternity, They will never, ever, ever be able to be like, and they are never like, the other nations. And he can't get it. And he sees that. And he says, I can't. I can only see that they're strong, like mountains. But I can't really. There's something elusive here. And what is it that's elusive? Because what is special about the Jewish people? The Jewish people are unique. Many things are special. But we are God's nation, as we know, right? Hashem chose us. We are his nation. He gave us his Torah. What does that mean, that we are Hashem's nation, that he's given us his Torah? So what this means is that we have a capacity for something which other human beings perhaps don't have a capacity. Now, this is an interesting thing. I'm just going to go very quickly to something very beautiful that we know about the Jewish people. And this comes from keeping the Torah. The Torah we know is God's wisdom, God's, and we connect to Hashem when we do a mitzvah, right? We have a capacity to live with, as we know, the famous words that we're living with now, day to day. We don't need to have, you know, to look into the Chumash to see it. Mesiras Nefesh. What is Mesiras Nefesh? Mesiras Nefesh means that a person is willing to go beyond themselves. Beyond themselves, meaning to connect to something higher, which is really sometimes contradictory to their own existence. That's real Mesiras Nefesh, because you're even willing to give up yourself for the higher something, which is unfortunately what we're being tested with now, literally, right? Day in and day out, our soldiers are standing there literally, and they are. They're giving up their lives. It's unreal that what's being asked. It's enough already, but that's what's being asked. And they're doing it. How do they have that capacity? They have that capacity. This is what Bilam saw, and he said, I can't get it. I see it, but I don't even know what I'm seeing. Because a human being's natural existence is to exist, right? That's what Hashem made us. A healthy person does everything that they can to continue to exist. To do something which will cause you not to exist, that's not a human being. That's a contradiction. The only way that that can happen is if we connect to Hashem as we do. Now, Hashem most of the time, thank God, doesn't ask us to cease to exist. That's not the goal, right? The goal is not to cease to exist. But sometimes, but what it means is that we cease to exist the way we want to, right? We exist in a godly way. And if that's what's being demanded, well, we'll do whatever's being demanded in order to fulfill what Hashem wants, in order to bring light into the world, right? That's as we say, to do what's right. But this is what Bilam can't understand. And that's why he finishes, that's what he says, Hen om levada dishkan. This is a nation that really dwells on its own. It's a nation that has a capacity which is beyond anybody's understanding. And because of that, it makes other nations be wary of us. They're not sure. They can't relate to it 100%. And we are not counted amongst the nations. Now, this other Mefarshim explained beautifully, though, it's the positive way we can say it also is that what does it mean we're not counted, we're not reckoned amongst the other nations? Other nations, we know, I mean, this is just a fact. If you look throughout history, you know, we look at Egypt and we say, well, we were in Egypt, right? So Egypt is Egypt. But it's not the same Egyptians that were then. We know that. Egypt is a country which has evolved. The Egyptians are not the Egyptians that lived there when we were in Egypt. We are one of the few nations in the world that we can say that actually continue to exist the same way. We haven't evolved. It's not the same Romans now in Italy that were then. It's a different country. It has the same name. But all of these countries, all nations, they start, they stop, they start, they stop. They don't continue to exist. Not only that, we know we are an eternal nation. This is what bothers other people. So we are a nation which is eternal. And this is part of what he's saying, is that all of the things that happen to other nations is not our destiny. Our destiny is a different destiny. The Jewish nation has a different trajectory. We have a different history. We continue to exist in the same way that we existed. It's interesting, although it is true that if you would go 1,500 years ago and you would meet a Jew, you might not initially recognize him, right? He'd look different, dress different. But I'll tell you what, live with them for 1 week, and is it going to be that different? Actually, no. They'll have the same Shabbos that we have. They'll keep kosher the way we do. It'll be the same. So many things will be the same. It's the same. We are the same. We are a nation that is eternal. And this is something that's hard for other people to understand, but it is what makes us. This is us. That's the uniqueness of the Jewish nation. And this is what Bilam sees, and he finds it so hard to, he can't understand what he's seeing. He sees it and he doesn't see it. And that's what's happening here. It's quite incredible. So already you can see how it's layered, the bracha, in so many different ways. I want to just make sure there's something else. Also, he's a beautiful thing that the Malbim explains. He says also that the reason why I can't curse them, so to speak, I can only good things can come out of my mouth, is because this nation is a nation which is not dependent on the natural occurrences of the world, on circumstances, on coincidences. This is a nation which, exactly, it's a nation of miracles and specific hashkacha, specific divine providence. And therefore, there's no way that I can say anything that Hashem doesn't want me to say. It's just not going to work. It won't affect them. They're different. They're very, very different. They're unique in that way.
So that explains anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
No, they don't understand. And they're
wary. They're very scared.
Sylvia,
100%.
I don't
know what else. 100%, yeah. And also, why Dafke mountains? Because just like a mountain and a hill is very hard to uproot, what he's saying is this nation will never be uprooted. And this is also, as we say, uprooted not from our place and not as a nation, right? So we are eternal both in our land and eternal as a nation. And this is, again, in those words, that's why he's using those specific words. Now, in the next bracha that he said, this is interesting because he said, who can count the dust of Yaakov? What does that mean, the dust of Yaakov? So Rashi gives two explanations. Let's see Rashi first, beautifully, the bracha. What does Rashi say? Here. In the next page here, let's see. Oh, okay, I want to just read I didn't read the end of the Rashi 9. Just to read, I know we said it, but just to see how Rashi says. He says, Davar acher, kishehein smeichin, when they are rejoicing, ein uma smeicha imahem. No nation rejoices with them. Shenemar Hashem badad yanchenu, Hashem will guide them in solitude. And he says, Ugusha uma is betoiva, when the nations are in a good state, they eat with each of them, and it is not entered into their account. And that's what it means. Which he means over here is that if things are good for the nations and for us, let's just say, which sometimes happens, when things are going well, we shouldn't worry that it's being taken off our account. You know how sometimes Yaakov was always afraid? He said, well, if I'm getting rewarded in this world, that means it's like all my good points, like it's going to cost me. Hashem says, don't worry. You can have good things and don't be afraid that it's being taken off of your account. But as we see from the first part, that the nations do not rejoice with us. We have a different trajectory, unfortunately and fortunately, whatever it may be. But let's understand, what does this mean, who has not counted the dust of Yaakov? So look, he says, interesting, something he says first, which is, we wouldn't imagine, but he says, da'adakaya debes Yaakov kulo. Who can count? He translates the word offer and not as dust. Sometimes dust we think of as many, right? Like we say, we can count, like, you know, Avraham was promised that the Jewish people will be as the dust of the earth. There'll be so many. Here he says something else. He says, the tender young of Yaakov. Because it's interesting, the word is, it's an Aramaic word, which is afraya, which is like a tenderness. It's a fascinating thing. It's like the smallness. So the tender young, which is a beautiful, obviously, what does that evoke? What is that? What does that mean to say? Why can't he curse them? When he mentions the young, the tender young, what kind of emotion does that bring out? When you speak about small children, what does that usually?
Innocence.
Okay, innocence, even more than innocence, is love, right? The love, yeah. Yes, it's just love. It's like a parent who unconditionally loves a young child. It's totally not dependent on what they do, definitely not, because they don't even do much. They don't do anything, actually. But it's not only is it not dependent on their love, but it evokes such a deep love of like a protection, you know? When you have a baby, all you think of, like you're always worried almost, like to protect them. Are they comfortable? Are they happy? Are they safe, right? That's the emotion that is evoked when you say the young, the tender young. So what we're bringing out over here in this point is Hashem's unconditional love for the Jewish people. That's the first point that Rashi is showing us. That Bilam says, I see that no matter what they're going to do, no matter what, even if they did something wrong, it doesn't matter because Hashem loves them unconditionally. This is a love of a father to the young child who's It's untouchable. And then, look what Rashi says, and then there's another way to translate it. He says, but before we get to the other, he says like this, also, one of the four divisions, as we say, how they camped, or you can say, Afar Yaakov is Ein Cheshbin, the literal way that we always say, there can be no calculation, but he doesn't talk about the amount of Jews. He says, what's the calculation here? There's no calculation of the mitzvahs that they do with offer. It's a funny translation. Which mitzvahs do we do with dust? So he gives examples. Do you know any? What do we do with dust? It's interesting. So he says, he gives examples of negatives and positives. Michelle? Oh, that's interesting. That's an interesting one, because that's not given, but that's also one, yeah. It's true. So he said, he gives examples like, you do not plow with an ox and a donkey. Interesting. Then he says, you don't, you shall not plow with mixed seed. So that's again in the dust. You don't mix the seeds. And then the positive ones is Efer HaPara, the ash of the cow that causes somebody who's impure to be pure. And then the dust of the Saita. Okay, I don't know if you know that the woman, that suspected woman, so she had, how is she purified, or how is it clarified that she hasn't sinned? So they take dust and they mix it in, and they mix in Hashem's name into the water, and then they sprinkle it on her and whatever. So very interesting pshat that Rashi's saying over here, that the dust that they do, the mitzvahs, not to do with the amount of Jewish people. Why? So I saw a beautiful thing. The depth of Rashi is fascinating here, because Rashi here is not showing so much the number. He's saying that the word offer is not to do with the number of the Jewish people. A number, anybody, and actually we're not the greatest number. We're one of the smallest nations. That's not our specialness. Our uniqueness is not in our number. Our uniqueness is in our quality, not in our quantity, our quality, right? So Efer over here has to do with quality and not quantity. Where do you see quality? So you see something, two things. First of all, the fact that we do many mitzvahs, that's the quality, right? Why dafke mitzvahs with dust, and why these mitzvahs? So I'll show you something interesting. So if you look at these mitzvahs, the first one that he mentioned the mitzvah of that you shouldn't plow with an ox and a donkey, and you shouldn't plow with mixed seed. Now, we know that those mitzvahs fall into the category of chukim, right? The ones we don't understand. We don't understand why. And it says an interesting thing, that every single time a person goes out to plow their field, they might think, if they have a donkey in their barn, well, wouldn't it be nice if I can use the donkey together with my ox and put it together, and it might be more effective? But I'm not doing it. Why? Because Hashem said so, right? So it's an incredible kind of a relationship that we have, where we do just as we said before, because Hashem said so, so to speak. It's a higher kind of calling, a higher life that a Jew has. Not only that, but it's a continuous mitzvah. Every time that we go out to plow in the field and we don't mix the two animals, we're fulfilling this mitzvah. So it's a constant mitzvah. It's a mitzvah that we can do all the time, as long as we avoid doing this thing. So again, showing the quality of the Jewish people. The other thing, if you can see, is something very interesting, because he talks also about the mixed seed. So the mixed seed is also something. Every time that we plant, and you know that people do plant that way, they mix many seeds, and you get all kinds of interesting crops, and sometimes perhaps for the environment, it might be better, in other words, that you're in with the season and the rain and whatever it may be, but we say, no, we're not going to do. We're going to do what Hashem says, right? That's the other thing is also interesting. What does it mean by quality? Because we see something very, very, very incredible here. As a Jewish nation, we make sure that what do? A, we are aware of the fact that Hashem loves us unconditionally. That was the first part. But over here, we're showing something else. Bilam sees something else about us. He says, this nation is loved unconditionally. But there's also something else special about them. They love Hashem back unconditionally. Here we see the response. In other words, they are willing to do mitzvahs that doesn't make any sense, that could be hard for them, and they do it anyway because they love Hashem unconditionally. So you can see that in these words, what Bilam is saying is, why can't I curse them? Why am I only going to be able to bless them? Because they are beloved by Hashem. And because they act so good to Hashem, they try, they go out of their comfort zone, they do things that are so sometimes beyond understanding and not even something that means so much there. In other words, not something that they have a feeling for. And that's why he uses the word offer, because offer is dust. We know dust is meaningless almost. You know, when you say something's meaningless and something's all over, it's something that you don't have enjoyment from. You know, the punishment for the snake, you have to eat dust. No pleasure. There's no pleasure in dust. It doesn't have taste. It doesn't have smell. There's no pleasure. There's nothing beautiful about it. We serve Hashem not because of the pleasure that it gives us. We serve Hashem because we want to be connected. Simple, again, unconditional. It's a connection. Like Hashem connects to us, we connect to Him. And that's also why He uses that word offer. It's that unconditional connection. So you can see here how in this bracha, what Bilam is really saying, this is like the introduction almost, bracha, to all the other brachas. This is a unique nation. They are so different. And because of that, it's impossible for me to curse them. They are different in every way, in themselves, in the way Hashem looks at them, in the way they behave, in how they conduct themselves, and what they're willing, the extent that they're willing to go to, if need be, in order to remain connected. So how can I possibly curse them? So you can see how all of these flow together and really are connected. It's quite interesting. Also, when it talks about Raiva, so the Raiva we said was a quarter, right? Because they're divided into four. But there's other meanings to Raiva. I want to show you what Rashi says. So Rashi says, Mispares Raiva Yisrael, Riviyai Sehen. The word Raiva means their matings. Okay, it's interesting. The offspring that emerges from their relations. And I think that's all that Rashi said here, right? That was all. Okay, yeah. So what he's saying over here also is that this is a very holy nation, a pure nation, a nation that lives, and he's going to come to that later. Remember the pasuk Matovu? We didn't get to that. That's in the next bracha. We're going to say how beautiful their tents, how they live such pure lives, how family matters so much to them, how the continuation of the Jewish people matters so much to them. But again, pointing out that this nation is so unique and so different and so special, it's impossible for me to say anything negative and that it should actually have an effect. I wanted to see if there was any of the mafreshim that I actually missed. Oh, also, Afar, another thing that he's saying. He's mentioning, because he mentioned that this is an eternal nation. As we said, they're eternal. They don't have the same fate as other nations. So what is really eternal about us? Because we know that not only do we have Olam Haba, but we have something else. We believe, one of the 13 beliefs, things, principles of the Rambam, that there will be Tchiyas HaMeisim, right? There's going to be the resurrection of the dead. So the resurrection of the dead is hinted to in the offer, as you mentioned, the burial, Michelle, exactly. So the burial is the fact that we came from dust, and we will go back to dust, but what Hashem will do is He will rebuild us from the ashes. And that's the idea here also. And that's what He's hinting to. So He's even hinting to the fact that this nation is not just eternal in the sense that we think of, but it's even more eternal than that. It's beyond time. We are also having Tchiyas HaMeisim, which is an incredible, if you want to say, an incredible prophecy that he has, almost kind of bordering like a prophecy. The other thing is also that he finishes off something very funny. We read those words, "Let my death be like the death of the upright." What is he saying over there? Such a strange thing. Is that a bracha? That has nothing to do with us. That's him. Actually, it's not. It's not a bracha. It says that when he was able to see this for a moment, right, this incredible nation, he got jealous. It's an automatic reaction. Look at this nation. They have all these special mitzvahs. They're willing to do everything to connect to Hashem. Hashem loves them unconditionally. They're so special. They're so unique. They're always, and as we, you know, when we talk about their uniqueness, they don't become part of the other people, right? They're always remain separate. They're always the Jewish nation. And he says, I want to have my end be like theirs. That's what he's saying over here. Let my end be like their end. But you see how he's speaking? He's still speaking like a wicked person. What do I mean? Because he's not saying, okay, I see that they're so special. Let me join them now. In other words, I don't want to put in the work. Being Jewish is a lot of work, right? As we're saying, it's a lot of work to remain separate, to remain different, and to keep up this kind of upright life that we're meant to and have this high expectations of us. Oh, I just want to reap the benefits at the end. You see how he talks? He talks like a foolish person in a way. What?
Like a
Oh, exactly. But that's right, Rona. He speaks foolish. My end should be like theirs. If you want your end to be like theirs, we got to start living like them. No. So you see, but it's like something that he can't even help himself, because he sees the beauty, that's what comes out of his mouth. So you can see already, it's quite incredible. It is only the first set, and you can already see how the light is shown on the Jewish people in such a magnificent way. This is really what's unique about this special brachas that we see. Let's see if there was anything else before I stop. Then I'll go home and I'll say, oh, there were so many other things. Also, we say, oh, mi mana. So the Ksavi says, mana means to count, but because we said it's not to do with quantity, it's to do with quality. But also mana, he says, has a language of, I forgot, in Mishle, there's a pasuk that actually it shows importance. So he's saying, who can mark the importance of the Jewish people? They are such a nation of quality, of value, you know. Why? Why is it that they have such a nation of quality? Because he says they do something very, very special. What is it? That they are able to even lift and sanctify the dust. What does that mean? And this connects to also what he started with. When he spoke about the Avais and the Himais, the mothers and the fathers, he saw something very beautiful about the Jewish people. He said, these people are not just religious on Shabbos, right, as we know. These people are holy 7 days a week. When they're doing their dust activities, when they're sweeping the floor, when they're doing the mundane, these are a holy people. Everything a Jew does, they do differently than everybody else, because we know that we are here to connect to the Hashem. And connecting to Hashem is not isolated to a moment in the day. It's 24/7. Whatever we do, we sanctify everything. This is the power of a Jew. That's what he started with. Because what did he say? He said something interesting. He said, look at the forefathers and the mothers. What was he saying? Because we said, where does Bilam come from? His grandfather was Lavan. What did Lavan say before they moved away? Do you remember when Rachel and Leah were there and they wanted to leave, and Yaakov, he came all angry to Yaakov. Remember when they ran away and Lavan, I don't know if you remember this part, and he comes chasing after them and he says, Habonais b'naisai v'habonim b'nai, right? The sons are my sons, the daughters are my daughters. That's what Lavan says. I mean, literally he means they're my grandchildren, but he means it much more. He says to Yaakov, he actually means something very spiritual. He says, listen, you want to have your time, your spiritual holy time? Okay, granted. But you know what? The sons are mine and the daughters are mine. What does that mean? He says, the regular day-to-day activities, we're the same. The physical, normal day-to-day activities, you have to accept that I am their grandfather just like you are their father, which means that my norms should be part of their life. However I want to live my life in the normal day-to-day physical activity, the material world, that you have to defer to me. I'm the grandfather. What does he mean? He means to say, Lavan, how he lived. Well, he lived a very corrupt life. And he says, in the physical world, you know, if you want to be successful, as we know, unfortunately, it's true in some cases, well, you have to be corrupt, right? If somebody's going to pay all their taxes 100%, somebody's going to lead their business 100% legally, well, some people might say, well, then you'll never succeed beyond expectation. Of course, that's not true, but technically speaking, you can succeed more when you cut corners. That's what Lavan is saying. You have to live like me. You have to be deceptive, because this world is a world of lies. It's a world of deception. It's a world of corruption. In your holy Shabbos, okay, I don't mind. You can be as pure as you want. But when it comes to the world, don't forget, it's mine. Over here, Bilam has to say, my grandfather was wrong. Lavan was wrong. I see where you come from. You come from Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah. They lived pure lives, not just on Shabbos, not just in the holy parts, every minute of their day. They were in sync with Hashem every minute of the day. We know how careful Avraham was to take care of everybody, right? He cared about everybody. He took care of how Yitzchak was, oh my gosh, Yitzchak was like the letter of the law. Everything was perfect. Yaakov himself, when he had to deal with Lavan, how difficult it was for him, because he tried to do everything properly, Hashem helped him, and he was able to be successful. Even though Lavan kept on acting corruptly, Yaakov still was successful. So we see, and also how the mothers, how they acted, but more than that, what they're saying is, if you saw the end of the specialness of Sarah's tent, what was special? It says that her challah was fresh a whole week. Who cares about the challah being fresh? That's just a mundane thing, bread. No. By us, our bread is different. Our bread is holy. What does it mean holy? We're not just talking about challah being holy. We're talking about Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, a whole week. The light shines a whole week. We live different lives. And this is what Bilam had to admit to now and say, oh, I'm starting, even though he doesn't understand, I'm starting to see. It's a mushel, isn't it? He has to say it as, because he doesn't really get it. This is different. This is a people to whom there's no division between their mundane, everyday lives and their holy lives. They live a very, very, if you want, not just a pure life, but they live a very, very consistent life. This is a different, a whole different ball game. And this is a special nation, and that's Lavadad Yishkan. We are a nation that dwells alone. So as we mentioned last week, we should remember that even though now we are truly a nation that lives alone, in the negative sense in some ways, but it's also a bracha, and we should remember that Hashem protects us. That even though it does seem that we don't have any friends, first of all, we do, which is amazing. Some people do stand out, the few, very few, but they do. And that's, we have to cherish the few that do. But we have to remember that ultimately, we have the strength from Hashem. We're not dependent on other people. And even though we are a nation that dwells alone, we are an eternal nation with incredible inner strength, with incredible strength, and Hashem will give us brachas, as we say, that we should be able to see it in a revealed way, that we shouldn't have to suffer. Rather, we should be, as we say, what we really want to be is a light unto the nations, that the nations should look at us and say, wow, and therefore want to learn, instead of separating. And Emir Tzashem, that's what will happen very, very, very soon. Emir Tzashem. So this is this first set, and next week we'll see the second set. It gets even